Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Well, hello, and welcome to the PMP Lessons Learned Monthly PMP Study Group Conference Call and Podcast. This is podcast number 79. We're recording this session on the 3rd of September, 2009, and we are now totally focused on version 4 of the PMBOK Guide. My name is Dana Safford. I'll be your host today. I've been a PMP since version 2 of the PMBOK and have over 25 years of project management experience. Our presenter tonight for this session should be familiar to many of you long-time participants in this call or you long-time podcast listeners. Why? Because he's David Radkovich, the former host of the series. He's volunteered to come back because he is a certified expert in earned value management, and he's agreed to revisit us again and impart a good portion of his wisdom in our direction. And David, make sure you do a star 6 to unmute your line before we get started here. I'll remind everybody, if you haven't downloaded a PDF copy of the presentation we're talking about today, you can do so. We distribute those files through Yahoo Groups. We have a group called PM Lessons Learned. And if you need the steps to go how to do that and to sign up for Yahoo Groups and things, you should go to pmlessonslearned.com, and in the left-hand column, you'll see a pointer to the Files and Presentations section, and that'll give you all the information that you need. If you're already a member at Yahoo Groups, once you have logged into the Yahoo Groups area and the PM Lessons Learned page, click the Files link in the left-hand column, then select Materials for the Monthly PM Exam Study Group, and from there, it's the next to the last couple files down at the moment. The file name is Project Cost Management, PMBOK V4, and there's both a PDF version and a PPT version, a PowerPoint version. The title of the file is EVM Presentation V4. And you'll also see a bunch of files in the last couple of months there as well. If you have not sat for the test yet, I also have just uploaded a new copy of the Brain Dump. You'll notice a Brain Dump file there with a September 3rd date on it. We'll grab that, and it'll give you an idea of how to prepare yourself from the time you place your bottom in the chair there in the test center until the time you have to hit the start button. There's always good stuff there, and that'll help you along with those things. So just pay attention to those things. But be careful with some of the old files. If you're roaming around there, some of the older files from 2008 and 2007 are for the version 3 of the PMBOK. Version 4 is different. Roughly, it is 30% difference from version 3 to version 4. And that's pretty much all in the processes and in their ITTOs, the inputs, tools, and techniques, and outputs. So if you use those older files, pay attention to that. And then finally, if you're on a shorter time scale than these monthly calls and you're willing to make a commitment to actively participate and take turns presenting study group material, our weekly virtual PMP study group may be right for you. And who runs that virtual study group? David Radkovich, our presenter for tonight. So if you'd like to get some more information for that, send an email off to pmstudy@pmlessonslearned.com. Okay, so we are pmlessonslearned.com, project managers helping project managers to make a difference. Thank you in advance for your participating in this month's call and for listening to the podcast. So let me introduce you to our presenter for this session. David Radkovich is an experienced and seasoned global project manager in both the public and the private sector. He is currently an earned value analyst for the U.S. Army's electromagnetic gun program. That must be like a BFG 9000 or something like that. Nice big, huge honking gun there. I like it. David provides oversight for the earned value management system and assists in the integration of an enterprise project management system. Previously, David was a service delivery and program manager for Schlumberger, where he was responsible for the completion of projects and services to private and public customers. David has worked internationally, conducting technology refresh projects and services in South America, Europe, and Asia. He lived in Jakarta, Indonesia for 3 years, where he ensured the consistent global methodology and practices of tools and techniques and service level agreements were applied on projects for over 50 customers throughout all of Asia. David holds a graduate certificate from the College of Performance Management, which is a component of the PMI for those who didn't know. He's earned his PMP certification from the PMI in early 2007. And finally, in September of 2008, David earned the Association for Advancement in Cost Engineering's prestigious Earned Value Professional, or EVP, certification. That's a very, very big deal. He's a highly motivated and energetic, generous volunteer. He consistently contributes to the project management profession. And to empowering project managers and people studying to be PMs, he is actively involved in the PM Lessons Learned networking group. He has hosted this monthly call, as I've mentioned, and he's currently leading the weekly sessions. So if you'd like to get involved in those weekly sessions, send us a mail on that, and David will be glad to respond. His recorded podcasts have received over 1,000 downloads, so he's a busy kind of guy. David, welcome, and take it away.
Thanks a lot, Dana. I really appreciate that intro. As you mentioned, I am doing earned value analysis for the Army. I will tell everybody that's listening on the call, especially the people that are in transition, I really feel one of the reasons I was able to land this particular position a few years ago was because I was studying for the PMP exam, and when they advertised that they needed somebody with earned value experience, I, at the time, did not even know how to spell EVM, but because I had studied the chapter of the PMBOK, I could at least talk in a common ground and explain how my experience in the past applied. So I was able to convince them to give me a shot, and it's something that's worked out really well, and that's one of the reasons I don't mind giving back, because I really feel studying for the PMP exam really, really did help me professionally. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started. The first two slides really were put together, as Dana mentioned, I do the weekly study group call, and so those first two slides really were covering some business for the weekly call, so those we can pretty much skip and go right to slide three, the introduction slide, and we're going to cover controlling costs in this. There's, as we'll see in a minute, there's three processes in Chapter 7, Project Cost Management. We're really going to focus on controlling costs. We're not going to talk too much about estimating in that. And the other thing I'm going to do a little bit different than most of the presentations you've seen from Dana is I'm really not going to talk about the ITTOs as much. My real focus here is to talk about the key concepts here for earned value, and I really think this will help you in the exam, because there will be, yeah, I can almost guarantee you, we'll see some questions really focused on the math for earned value, and really want to focus on those key concepts.
And if I can go ahead for 1 second, David, for those who want those other things that David is not going to cover today, I'll be doing a session on the rest of the cost management knowledge area in a month or two. So we'll cover the rest of that a little later on. Go ahead, David.
All right, so slide four really just goes over the agenda a little bit. We're going to talk about the basic introduction to earned value management, talk about some of the terms and examples. I've got a copy of what's called the Gold Card. That's actually a Defense Acquisition University slide, but it really helps. It's something I highly recommend that you print out and kind of keep by your side to act like a cheat sheet a little bit. There's valuable information on that one little card. So we'll talk about some helpful hints and websites. And the last section, which we probably won't have time to go into tonight, is a little bit more detail on progress reporting slides. When we say, you know, we're reporting progress, there are different ways to report progress, and I had thrown those slides in as extras, so don't think we'll get to it today. There is a quote that I have here on this slide that says, the key is not to prioritize what is on your schedule, but to schedule your priorities. And I really think that's a good statement and really applies here, because, you know, when we're talking about scheduling and the controlling costs and schedule, you know, we don't want to be chasing our tail and, you know, saying, okay, well, this is a priority, so I have to schedule it. You should have looked at your schedule, known what your priorities were, and then scheduled those accordingly. And that's from Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective. And you'll see that in most of my slides, when I have a source that I'm referencing, I'm going to put that reference on the bottom of the slide. All right, so project cost management. The fifth slide shows the changes from the third to the fourth, and as you can see, very little changes. All they really did was change the name from the noun verb to the verb noun. So instead of cost estimating, it's estimate cost. Instead of cost budgeting, it's determine budget. And instead of cost control, it's control cost. So those are really the only three, the only changes they made as far as process names. They didn't add any processes or eliminate any. So what is earned value? Well, earned value is a technique for measuring the performance of work and is used to help establish our performance measurement baseline. It's a methodology for integrating scope, schedule, and resources for objectively measuring project performance and progress. So that's directly out of the PMBOK glossary. One thing I always like to tell people about the glossary, you know, don't forget to study the glossary at the back of the PMBOK. You know, I think people have that natural tendency once they finish the last chapter to take a breath and, you know, finish reading there. But don't, you know, there's a lot of valuable information in that glossary. So don't forget to study the glossary. I also have another definition here, and this is actually coming from a NASA website, that, and I have that link at the bottom, and it just talks a little bit different spin on what is EVM. And one of the things here says it helps predict future performance based on trend, and that's a key part of EVM. You know, it's not just the measuring of it, but what we do with that information. You know, how do we use that information to help us predict what's going to happen? So that's, you know, one of the keys that we have to get out of, you know, getting the information. Going on to slide number 8 now. This is just another slide I throw through in just to talk about, you know, what does it take to implement EVM? You know, from a government standpoint, EVM is a big thing, and there's actually ANSI standards that apply here. There's actually 32 standards that they have to fully implement EVM. And as you can imagine, you know, it takes a lot to do that. It takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of training, tools, time, and commitment and communications. So I wanted to just throw that in here to sit there and say, you know, it, you know, really implementing EVM right does take a lot of time and effort. I would say the same thing about risk management. You know, to properly manage risk, it takes a lot of time and effort. To properly manage change control, again, a lot of time and effort, money, but I will tell you that I firmly believe that the more you spend on these areas, the better you can control your project, and then ultimately it's going to help improve your performance and your time. So, and this last slide, again, this is just really just informational slide, and this shows a project management maturity model, and the purpose of this slide is just to show that really to implement EVM, you really need to be at least at a level 2 of the maturity model, where you have common processes and common language and being consistent with your process. So you have to be at least that high up on the scale to properly implement EVM. All right, so what is EVM compared to traditional management? Well, this next slide actually comes from the Defense Acquisition University slide. Again, I have the link at the bottom where you can actually go down here, and there's a tutorial that you can actually walk through from that site. But they talk about the difference between traditional management, which is just basically you had your plan and you had your actual cost. So in this example, they're showing you that you had $50 planned or budgeted to work. So far, you spent $40. So if you just look at, well, I was supposed to spend $50, I've only spent $40, you know, just looking at it from that standpoint, you'd say, well, you know, I'm doing good. I'm spending less than I had planned. So that's what traditional models look at. Earned value actually throws a third factor in, which is what did you actually perform? Not, you know, only what you planned, but what did you actually perform? So we're taking that same example where we had planned to do $50 worth of work, but as you can see in the highlighted area, we actually only performed $35 worth of work. So we only did $35 out of $50, and then we had an actual cost of $40. And we're going to talk about schedule and cost variances in more detail, but if we look at a schedule variance, which is the earned value minus planned value, we see it's a negative $15, which is unfavorable. And if we look at the cost variance, we see that it's a negative $5. But again, it's 35 minus 40, and that's also unfavorable. So looking at it from a traditional standpoint, we would have thought maybe we were doing good. But when we look at it comparing what we actually performed, now we see we're not doing as well as we. Now, I use terms here unfavorable, and being an earned value, you know, doing this for a living now with the Army, I really struggle with people that want to say SPI and CPI when we get to those factors, whether they're good or bad, because, you know, these are numbers. They're not necessarily good or bad. It's what's causing the numbers to happen. You might have a positive cost variance that turns out to be really a bad thing because you did such a bad job of estimating your cost. And if, you know, so to me, that's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. You shouldn't have estimated, you know, done such a bad job of estimating your cost. So, you know, I tend to try to, you know, get people away from thinking good or bad. I do say unfavorable here. All right, any questions? I'm going to move on because I'm trying to cover a lot of ground. So the first term we're really going to talk, or the first definition we're going to talk is PV or planned value. Now, in the government, they still tend to use some of the old terms that they used even before the last version of the PMBOK, version 3, and that was BCWS, which is budgeted cost of work schedule. So I happen to like the old terms better. It makes more sense to me than planned value, but they've tried to simplify it, and maybe they were successful. I'll leave it up to people to, you know, judge that on their own. So what planned value is the authorized budget assigned to the work to be accomplished for an activity or WBS component up to a given point in time. And I have a note down here that values can be only for its current period or cumulative for the entire project. And we'll see that when we look at our example. So with that, we'll go to the next slide, which is our example of planned value. And what you can see here is I have a line here, our reporting period, and we'll use the same reporting period for the rest of the examples, is we're in April 07. We started our work in January 07, and we expect to finish in July 07. And this is our reporting period, April 07. So when you look at those dots and how they're connected, if you look at the dot between March and April, you see March being at $40 and April being at $50. That's a $10 difference. So that was the work schedule to be performed or planned for the period, you know, if it's all of April, depending, you know, if we're talking about the first of the month, that's the work that we had planned to accomplish during that period, $10. But if we look at the dot, the $50, that's the cumulative amount of work we plan to complete, you know, from January through April. And if we plot this out and we get to our end state here, which is $105, at the, you know, I have a note there that that's the BAC, budget at completion. So all the planned value cumulative turns out to be your budget at completion. I also have a arrow there pointing to that line, and that line represents your performance measurement baseline. So that's your baseline of work that you plan to perform during this project. Does that make sense to everybody?
Sure does. I'll remind folks that if they want to say or ask something or ask a question, a star 6 will mute your line if you have not yet done so, and then another star 6 will mute you back.
And don't hesitate to jump in if you have a question. We will like to keep this very interactive if we can. So the next term we're going to talk about, slide 14, is earned value. The old term was BCWP, budget of cost of work performed. So that's the value of the work performed expressed in terms of the approved budget assigned for an activity. So, you know, we did an activity or a WBS component, we did a, you know, piece of work. How much budget did we assign to that activity? And since we finished, when we completed, we say that we earned that value. So, again, we're not talking actual cost here now. We're just talking about what the cost we budgeted to perform that work that we did. So, and I have some, like I said, some additional slides at the end of the presentation to explain the different techniques you can use to determine what your earned value is. If we go to the next slide, we'll see a graphic representation of that. Again, you see that now I stop at April 07 because this is the reporting period, and you know, I don't know what I earned, you know, in the future, so I can only show the past. So I'm showing the 4 months between January and April, and as of April, my cumulative earned value, and that's why you see the C up there, is $35. Again, I can look at what I earned between March and April and say that was my period value. But we'll stick with cumulative numbers for now. All right, and next main term is actual cost, or the old term ACWP, actual cost of work performed. And so total cost actually incurred and recorded in your accounting system to accomplish the work performed for that same activity that we just looked at in earned value. So what did it actually cost us to do the work? You know, we had a budgeted amount, but what was the actual? And, you know, there should always be a difference between budget and actual, unless you're talking about something like level of effort activities. But, you know, these were estimations and plans that we put together, and our actual calls hardly ever lines up with what we had budgeted or planned. So the AC must correspond in definition and coverage to whatever was budgeted for that planned value and earned value. So, you know, again, if you're talking direct cost or direct hours or you know, all costs including indirect, you got to make sure that you're capturing everything involved in that actual cost. And going on to slide 17, we'll see that's the graphic representation of that. Again, you know, we don't know what our actual costs in the future are going to be. We're going to just look at our actual cost here from April. So in this example, our actual cost through April of what we spent to perform all that work has been $40. All right, we're going to talk about two more terms here now. The first one is schedule variance. And so the schedule variance equals the earned value minus the planned value. So what we're looking at is, you know, well, you know, the work that we had planned to do and the work that we did do, what's the difference? A schedule variance will equal zero when the project is completed. This is something I think they focused more on version 4 than they did in version 3, because I think they actually included it in the PEM box now. I don't think it was there before. But that's a very significant statement there, and I really, you know, would say this is a key concept, because what's going to happen as you, you know, since you're comparing your scheduled work to the work that you earned, as you complete a project, you should do all the work that was scheduled. I mean, there shouldn't be anything left over. So as you accomplish that work and you earn that work, your schedule variance should, you know, go to zero at the end of the project. Now, the other thing that they mentioned now in version 4 is that this should be used in conjunction with critical path methodology, because once again, if you're looking, you know, at a high level picture of your schedule variance, you know, if you don't consider critical path, it might look like you have a good schedule variance, but if that schedule variance is masking a task that might be on your critical path that has a negative schedule variance, but some positive schedule variance in other areas masks that, then you might be in trouble, because you might think you have a good schedule variance, but in reality, you have a task that's on the critical path that's in trouble. So you definitely need to consider the critical path with schedule as well. The statement here is a positive schedule variance is favorable because that indicates we've completed more work or purchases than we planned, while a negative SV is unfavorable. We've completed less work or purchases than we planned. Everybody okay with that? The formula is on the bottom. SV equals EV minus PV. I leave a tip later on, but I'll throw it in here now. If you notice in the formula, EV comes first. It's EV minus PV. When we look at cost, we'll see EV minus CV. When we look at SPI and CPI, we'll see EV divided by PV and AC. So the EV always comes first. I found that to be helpful when I was trying to remember the formulas, that EV always came first.
And David, if I can interrupt you 1 second, you'll find in the brain dump that we talked about earlier, the PM Lessons Learned brain dump, and as we go through the questions, they're structured such, not the questions, but the formulas, they're structured such that EV is definitely always first in pretty much every single one of those terms to keep cementing that do EV first concept. So thanks for that.
Okay. And, you know, doing the brain dump, since you mentioned brain dump, then I will say, doing the brain dump is critical, because when I took the exam, you know, even though I use these terms on a regular basis, you know, writing them down without the pressure of the exam, without the pressure of the question, really helped, because when finally a question came up, I could look at the formulas and say, oh, that's the formula that applies here. So it really, really helps to write these down ahead of time, because when you're, you know, trying to focus on the question, you don't want to have to think about what, well, what's the right formula. All right, so the next definition is the cost variance. So the cost variance equals the earned value, EV, minus the actual cost. So, you know, how much did we spend, you know, earn, what did we do, which is the budget that for the work that we did, minus what it actually cost. A positive cost variance is favorable. It means we either performed more work or got more purchases completed at less cost than we planned. While negative is unfavorable, means the work or purchase completed cost more than we planned. Now we're going to put all this together. So we've learned four terms. We've learned earned value, planned value, actual cost, and we learned cost variance and schedule variance. So we're going to put these all together. And if you can kind of imagine this slide, if you're going back to all the other previously slides, I've just basically superimposed all of those slides on top of each other here. And so now I see my planned value curve, I see my earned value, and my actual cost curves all together. And you can see that the earned value and the AC stopped at my reporting period, which is April 7th. And when I put my formulas together for the cost variance, I see EV minus AC equals the cost variance. So in this example, it's 35 minus 40 equals minus 5, means that we earned $35 worth of work, but it costs us $40. And our earned value minus our planned value equals 35 minus 50, or negative 15. Earned $35 worth of work, but we had planned to do $50 worth of work. So we're actually minus $15 there. Both are unfavorable in this example. Okay, no questions. Moving on to slide 21. And we're going to our next definition, which is SPI, the Schedule Performance Index. The Schedule Performance Index is a ratio, so we're dividing now instead of subtracting. So we're dividing EV by PV, EV divided by PV. SPI greater than 1 indicates that we're ahead of schedule, while an SPI of less than 1 indicates we're behind schedule. Now keep in mind, again, we're bringing, you know, we're talking schedule here, but we've made these a cost, a value, a monetary value, and that's how we're determining the SPI. We're on slide 22, CPI. The cost performance index. Again, when we say index, you know, there's a, you know, should be division. So we're taking cost performance index equals the ratio of EV to AC. So it's EV divided by AC. A CPI of greater than 1 indicates a cost underrun or below budget. Or a cost of greater than 1 indicates a cost overrun or over budget. And we'll see that in an example. All right, so let's put it together with the CPI and SPI now. So again, the same chart that we looked at earlier, but now we're looking at CPI and SPI. So using the same example as before, 35 divided by 40 equals a 0.85. A 0.85 indicates that we're behind schedule. We had planned, for CPI, 0.875 for CPI means we're over budget. Another way to look at it is when you see the 0.87 here, is to kind of look, think of it as compared to a dollar. I mean, for every dollar work that we did, actually, we only got 87 cents worth of work out of that dollar. So it cost us a dollar to get the work done, but we only got 87 cents worth of value out of that dollar. That's another way to look at it. The FPI, 35 divided by 50 equals 0.70. Again, means we're behind or under, you know, behind schedule. I have so in our example, CPI is less than 1, indicating that we're spending more than we planned to get work accomplished. Our SPI is also less than 1, indicating we are not getting the work and purchases completed at the pace that we planned. Both are unfavorable. And in the little box there, I say, can we get on track? So if you look at this, if you look at our planned value line, through April 07, we had planned to do $50 worth of work. For the next reporting period in May, we should get $60 worth of work done total. So we subtract 60 from 50 from 60, we get $10. So for the next reporting period, we should get $10 worth of work done. But in reality, we'd have to perform $25 worth of work to get to 60, because we're only sitting at $35 worth of schedule right now. So to get to $60 worth of schedule, we'd have to actually perform $25. So, And we only have $20 left to spend there because we spent $40 to date. And by the next reporting period, we should only spend $60. So we have to, we have to get $25 worth of work done. We can only spend $20 doing it. And so far, we haven't been able to perform on schedule and on cost. So I think it's very unlikely that we're going to be able to get that contract.
David, Dana, a different question for you. Now that we've seen this particular project has been going on for 4 months and it's not doing very well, as you just mentioned, is there a time you've seen in your experience that it's time to say maybe it's we should re-estimate, re-baseline, do something else in order to really understand where we're supposed to be?
Dana, that's an excellent question, and you know, I don't think there's any good answer there. I will tell you that there's been some government reports and surveys. I don't remember the exact term that they have done, but they basically says, yeah, I might even have an example later on with the exact numbers, but it basically says that once a project is 20% complete, improving by more than 5 or 10% is highly unlikely. So if you're performing it, a cost of 0.87 and you're over 20% of your project completed, it's almost impossible that you're going to actually be able to correct that.
Interesting. Thanks.
And I might have the exact sample and the link to that survey. Okay. So, now we got these numbers, as I mentioned earlier. We've got numbers now, but what do we do with these? So we're going to talk a little bit about forecasting and, looking at these numbers now and what does it mean. So we're going to talk about a few more terms. We're talk about BAC, budget at completion. We're going to talk about EAC, your estimate at completion. And we're going to talk about the estimate to complete. Estimate to complete is the expected cost to complete all the remaining. EAC, estimate at completion, is the expected total cost to complete the project. And as we already showed, the BAC was the total planned budget for the project, or your cumulative BCWS for the whole project or planned work. So EAC, this is where a lot of people, I think, get confused. But, again, I'm going to try to remind you, always you think about what you're trying to accomplish here. So your estimate at completion, there's three techniques for calculating. The very first one is an estimate at complete based on a new estimate. So you take your actual cost cumulative plus your estimate for the remaining work as forecasted by the project team. So you basically go to your project team and say, okay, how much do you need to complete your task? So you get them to give you a new forecast or a new estimate. And you might want to use this if you think your original estimate assumptions were flawed or no longer relevant. You may think of this as a bottoms-up estimate because you're going to the team saying, give me a new estimate. You keep in mind that's going to be costly because it's going to take away your team away from doing their task. Now they're trying to figure out the estimate again. So it's the most costly way to calculate, but it's also probably the most accurate.
And this is Dana again, and that's sort of tied with the question I asked a few moments ago, that if you're that far gone, perhaps this is maybe the only way you might stand a chance of getting some additional financing and funding to bolster your project so you can complete it. That new estimate can be helpful, but as you said, it's very expensive to get.
Right. The next one, and I mentioned three, and I'm actually showing four here, and the reason for that is the difference in the PMBOK versions. Probably didn't quite catch that one. I updated the slide between version 3 and version 4. But the next one is EAC based on ETC performed at the budgeted rate. So you use this when your project team thinks the causes of the variances will not occur in the future. So for some reason, you've had some cost variances here, but you don't think those cost variances are going to apply in the future. To me, an example of that would be, last year when the gas price spiked up. If you don't think that might cost, if you had planned on $2 a gallon and it's almost $4 a gallon, that could really affect your project. But if you think for some reason the price is going to go back down to $2 in the future, and that's when you would use something like this. And that's EAC equals your actual cost plus your budget at completion minus your earned value. So one of the questions I'll ask here is, what does your budget at completion minus your earned value, what does that give you? If you take your budget for the whole project and you subtract the amount of work that you've done to date for earned value, What does that leave you? Any takers on that answer? Well, I won't make you suffer. That actually gives you your remaining work, right? It's your how much budget did you have down? You're subtracting, you know, what work you've actually accomplished to date to earn value. That actually leaves your remaining work. So now this kind of makes a little bit more sense to you. So all you're doing is saying, okay, I have this much work remaining. I spent this much cost, my actual cost to date. Add the two together. That gives you your EAC. Again, you use this when you do not think that the variances that you've had to date are going to occur in the future. You've looked at the problem. You understand why you had a cost variance. It's not going to continue, all right? Now, the next one is the EAC based on your present CPI. You use this when your project team thinks the cause of the variance will continue in the future. So using that same example that I used before about cost of gas, you think that the price per gallon is going to remain high through the remaining of the project. And here, all you're doing is you're taking your budget at completion and you're dividing it by your CPI. Now, again, your CPI, remember we said that if a CPI was less than 1.8 something, as an example, if you divide that small number, 0.87, into your budget at completion, you're going to get a higher number. If your CPI would happen to be positive or 1 point something, you're dividing that into your BAC, then that's going to actually lower your number, and so your EAC will be a little bit lower. Again, the CPI is your cost performance, means how much value are you getting for the work that you are accomplishing, your earned value minus your actual cost, or divided by your actual cost. That's what your CPI is, right? Now, there is another variant on that that they threw in for version 4, and they say EAC based on present CPI and SPI, and that's used when you think both of the indices will affect your estimate to complete here. And so here, you're basically doing your actual cost plus BAC minus EV, which we already talked was the remaining work, and you're dividing it by your CPI times your SPI. So you're dividing your remaining work by a combination of both indices, your CPI and your SPI. That kind of is, you know, to almost think about it, giving you a worst case scenario, because you're saying both my cost and my schedule is going to affect my outcome. And I think that's sometimes pretty realistic, because it's been in my experience that schedule variances almost always ultimately leads to more cost. It may not be a complete, 100%, and you can actually throw another variant on this example here by saying, okay, I'm going to weight CPI and SPI. You know, I'm going to give more weight to CPI, so you'll actually multiply that CPI by, let's say, 80, and you'll multiply the SPI by 20. And so you're weighting those factors. So you can actually do it that way as well.
I have a question.
This is Bart.
You say this is used when the project team thinks both indices will affect the EAC. What brings you to the opinion that it both will affect versus only the CPI will affect it?
Bart, the easy example I can give you is on projects that I'm familiar with, project management costs as an example. We have a task here that is basically for the project management cost. As we fall behind on our project, our project starts going longer than we expected. Let's say we had expected to finish in April, but it's now May and going into June, so we've got 2 extra months of the project. I've now got to pay that project manager to be on that project 2 extra months.
Okay.
I didn't have the budget in there before. So that would be an example of how the SPI, the CPI would be is if that project manager was cost me more, which I thought it was going to cost me $100 an hour, but he's cost me $110 an hour. That would be the CPI effect.
So I think what you're saying is if you think this is going to drag out and the extra time is going to cost you extra money, then this SPI is going to affect the final cost.
And Dana asked a question earlier, and I mentioned a government research project, and what they found was that on a lot of large government projects, calculating this way was actually the usually was the bottom line, you know, was almost always came the closest to predicting the actual cost. I will tell you that I had a project that I was working on with the Army, and we had a huge cost growth and did a rebaseline before I understood these techniques. That I went back later and I looked at using this approach, and this approach almost nailed the actual increase in the project almost perfectly.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, that was a good question.
It was a good answer.
All right. So so EAC example. So now, again, let's take those same numbers that we've been using in our examples and apply them to an EAC based on a new estimate. So, again, this is when we actually ask our project team, go in and redo a new bottoms-up estimate. So we have our actual cost, which we already know is $40, and now we're adding our estimate to complete, which is our bottom-up estimate. So I just made up a number here, $80. So I'm saying now that the EAC now, based on doing a new estimate, now is $120. Okay? EAC based on our atypical variances, in other words, we don't expect the variances to continue in the future. So we have our actual cost, which again was $40. We have our BAC minus our earned value, which was 104 was our BAC minus the 35 our earned value. We add that to the $4 and we come up with $109. Again, the 104 minus 35 represents the remaining work to do. So the cost we spent to date minus how much work we have remaining. So that's $109. And then our EAC based on our atypical variances, which is dividing by CPI, we come up with $119. And I would expect that because we know that our CPI was not favorable, so I would expect it to be higher than the EAC based on the atypical. Did everybody see that?
Yeah.
Let's move on then. Now, this is something new in version 4 that they've added, but I think it's for me doing earned value, you know, on a daily basis, it's a very, very important concept and something that think about. So this is the TCPI, or the Two Complete Performance Index. Again, it's an index, so there's going to be division involved here. So so it's the cost to perform, the cost that is the cost performance that must be achieved on the remaining work to meet our management goals, such as our BAC or our EAC. So since I say you can use it for either BAC or EAC, the first example shows using it for a BAC. The second example shows using it for EAC. So we have our budget at complete minus our earned value. And again, I think we've talked about what that means. It means remaining work. Our BAC minus AC, budget at completion minus our actual cost. What is that? Anybody want to venture to guess at that? Think about it for a second and tell me if you can think of what you think that represents. Your budget at completion, your total budget, minus the cost you've actually spent today. What does that leave you? It leaves you your remaining cost or your remaining budget.
All you're doing here
is dividing your remaining work. You're dividing that by your remaining cost. And so that's going to give you an index that says, okay, this is how I have to perform to complete the project, you know, by my BAC. Kind of goes back to your question, Dana. This is a good example when you use TCPIP, when you want to know, okay, you know, how well do I have to perform now if I want to complete this project on time? So using our examples, 104 minus 35 divided by 104 minus 40, if we do that, the math, it comes out to 1.78. So it means now I have to perform at a performance index of 1.78, which again, it means I have to perform favorably to the good now, where I have in the past been performing only at 0.87. So I have to go from performing at a 0.87 ratio to performing at a 1.78 to complete the project on time. You have to ask yourself, if I haven't been able to perform better than one in the past, what leads me, to believe I'm going to perform? So, my question if a contractor was telling me this, my question to him would be, well, what are you doing to improve your performance? What steps have you taken to, you know, kind of show me that you've done something that's going to help improve this performance, right? Right. Now, ETC, I noticed that they took ETC out of the Pembok 4.0, so I'm really going to skip the slide. I left it in there just so that you can see how to calculate it. It was in version 3, but it's not in version 4. There are a couple formulas. It's basically the same thing as your EAC, but now you're talking your estimate to complete, so not your total cost at the end, but what it's going to cost to finish the project. Okay.
David, have you heard whether any of the ETC formulas appear in the test at all?
No, I have not heard. I have not heard that. I don't even remember if I had one during the test. And again, I give the examples there on slide 29. Yeah. We're going to skip that. Okay. Now, the next slide, slide 30, is something called the gold card. Now, this is actually a got this off the DAU site. I had the link earlier for the DAU site, but it's also might be hard to see. It's also in the right-hand corner of this slide, actually. You can actually click on it and go to the DAU site and download this, and it downloads in a PowerPoint presentation. I will tell you, I use Earned Value every day, and I have this posted on my desk because, again, you know, when trying to, you know, rapidly think about these formulas and that, you know, I don't want to mess up, so I always refer to this when I'm talking to somebody and try and make sure I'm using the right formula and the right standard. The negative thing about this slide is that they use the old terms. On this particular version, I actually went in there and added EV and AC and PV in the appropriate places. So you see that there. That's something I added. But it does show a couple good things here, and a couple things that I've seen on either, you know, it's been so long since I took the test, I don't remember what was actual questions or what was practice questions. But, you know, I remember one question that stumped me for a while was management reserve, you know, and contingency, and which one was included in your PMB and which one wasn't. And if you look on the right-hand side up there, it's real clear that management reserve is not part of your PMB or your performance measurement baseline.
Mm-hmm.
It's extra money that management keeps aside in case your project runs into trouble. They can fund you, but it's not part. Contingency, like risk contingency, would be part of your planning packages or undistributed budget, and that would be part of your PMP. So that's, you know, one thing that shows there. So I just think this is a very helpful cheat sheet to keep around. Right, going to slide 31. Just trying to, again, put it all together. This kind of shows what we must compare when we do earn value. So we have our BCWS, or our planned value, what we should do. If we take what we should do and we bring in what we did, EV did do, SV divided by EV, this is our SPI, and if we subtract, we get our schedule. Now, if we take what we did do and we take what I'm clicking through it, so yeah, I don't know if you guys could hear me click. I realized I was doing that without telling you guys that. But sorry, I'm going to go back up. Start at the beginning of that slide. I clicked once, and it brought down the little box at the bottom, BCWS and BCWP together. Click a second time now, and it brings my actual cost down and shows what formulas applied there. So what we did do compared to what our cost was. And if we take our cost and we compare it to our EAC, our estimate at completion, it gives us our estimate to complete. And if we bring our estimate to complete compared with our BAC, we get our TCPI. All right, so I'm just going to go through a couple quick questions here to make you think a little bit. So this question I actually got from one of the Yahoo groups that I follow, and I don't know where the question originally started, but I will tell you almost every other month this question throws a bunch of people that's on that group. And somebody always asks, you know, to explain the answer. So we have the postmortem earned value analysis of project shows that it's going to be closed, and it shows the following data. Our SPI is at 0.72, and our CPI is at 1. So what is this telling you? Anybody want to take a shot at answering this? You know, one thing I always try to do is, what can I eliminate? Well, I know the CPI being at 1, so I know the cost is not, ahead or behind schedule here. So anything that says the cost, there's something wrong with the cost, isn't a correct answer. Anybody else want to? One of the key words here is that this project's going to be closed. And when we went through the examples, I mentioned about SPI or schedule variance. When you were going to, when a project is closed, does the SPI and schedule variance? There should not be a schedule variance. Therefore, SPI should be 1 always when a project is closed normally. So a lot of people will think that there's not enough information here to tell you that this project was completed abnormally, but it was, because if it wasn't completed abnormally, your SPI would be, 1, or since it's close to being close, it would be approaching 1. Because to when you finish, a project, all your work scheduled should have been completed. So you should have earned value for all the work that you scheduled. So your EV divided by your plan value should be really close to 1. So I think the correct answer here is that the project was terminated before completion, and at the time, we were behind schedule and on budget. So to me, the correct answer should be C. Hope that's right. I didn't show the answer, but that's what the correct answer should be. So again, I'm just trying to make you think with that question. Does everybody understand?
Yes.
Why SPI should be what? The key point here is that when a project closes normally, SPI should be 1. So your SPI, actually, as you come close to finishing a project, your SPI becomes a very almost useless statistic, because it should be approaching 1. It's not that you're performing better at the end. It's just that, even if you're behind, if you're behind, as you get that work completed, that should improve your SPI.
And that's what was making me think a little bit, because I could tell by the CPI we're on budget, and because the SPI is less than 1, we're ahead of schedule. But, behind schedule. But the part that got me was the termination part. Since up top in the question it says your project is going to be closed, that says you're done, and if you're less than 1, then you're going to be terminated early. So yeah, I got that now.
Okay, so my next question is, and this again is actually coming out of Rita's book, and the fifth edition, which was actually the book for the third edition of the PMBOK, but it's the only edition I had, so. I used it, but the question still applies, I think. Yeah. One common way to compute an estimate at completion is take the budget at completion and do what? So you want to figure out, how you're doing in your project.
You multiply by CPI.
Yeah.
That's close. It is by CPI. Multiply is not the right thing. It's divide by.
Yeah.
Because, again, so you divide by CPI. All right. And I did do say that there. I did give that answer. Okay, so question 3. This is a little bit worded question, but although the stakeholder thought there was enough money in the budget halfway through the project, the cost performance is 0.7. To determine the root cost, the several stakeholders audit the project and discover the project cost was estimated using top-down, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what that means, analogously. Means top down. Although the activity estimates add up to the project estimate, the stakeholders think something was missing in how the estimates were complete. Which of the following describes what was missing?
Bottom up.
That's correct. Good answer.
Mm-hmm.
We should have used bottom up estimating, because obviously we use top down estimating, which is the cheapest way to estimate. It's the quickest and cheapest, but it's not the most accurate. So they kind of gave you the answer, I think, by saying that, we know that the estimates must be wrong, so we probably should have used bottoms up.
Good question.
Okay. And question 4, and this came from, I have the website down there where it came from. Estimate at completion is a periodic evaluation of total what?
The
estimate at completion.
The forecasted project cost.
That's right. A.
Oh, good one.
All right. And last but not least, in which process would earned value analysis be used? Plan communications, distributed information, report performance, or report project value.
Report performance?
Report
either
performance.
C or D.
It's definitely C. All right. And last but not least, if I did the math right on this question, I made this question up myself, but I one of the reasons I did this, and I'll just tell you, you know, what I'm trying to get you to do in this question here, is I'm giving you CPI, I'm giving you SPI, and I'm giving you AC. I'm asking you what the value of PV is. Do we have enough information to get that? And the answer is yes, there is enough information. And I think I had a question like this on my exam. I'm not sure, like I said, get confused between what we're
No, it's a pretty common question. Yeah.
The first thing that you have to do is you have to calculate earn. You want to know your PV value. All you have is AC here. So you don't have you have two components of cost, but you only have one component of CPI, your SPI. So since you only have SPI, in order to get PV, you really need to calculate your earn value first. So the first thing you have to do is calculate your earn value. Then you can, backwards math it and come up with your SPI. And I think in my example, I'll show you how I did that. I hope my math is right, but I'm just showing you that that's how I would do it. So I basically use the formula EV divided by AC equals CPI because I have AC and I have CPI. So I put those into the math, and then I come up that earned value should be 84. And then to solve for PV, I now use the formula EV divided by PV equals SPI and use the math to come up with PV. All right?
Yeah.
Now, this next slide, unfortunately, on my screen right now, I think actually in the PDF it looks okay. Here on the PowerPoint, for some reason, the sample report isn't really showing up. I don't know if everybody else is having the same problem, but I do on my PC. The sample report really doesn't show up, but I believe if you the PDF it shows up okay. And I was just giving you an example of what that on. And, I told you about the DOD study that was done. So after a contract is 15% complete, there's a 99.9% probability that the CPI will not improve by more than 5%. So basically, if your CPI and SPI fall below 0.95 and your contract is over 15% complete, you're most assured of having a negative trend at the end. Okay, a couple of hints for the exam is to know the formula as well and be able to solve for any missing component. As I mentioned before, EV always comes first. Write the formulas as part of your brain jump. And always assume you're working on a large project. That's just, assumption that you might use throughout the PMBOK and throughout the exam. I've included a couple helpful sites here. The PMPodcast.com, Cornelius Fischner does that, and he's been a speaker for us in the past. He also does a webcast series for the P&P Prep. So if you go to that site, you can see there. Episode 53, I think he's up to maybe 120 now, but episode 53 actually evolves around earned value. I talked about the DAU, Defense Acquisition University. It's geared to government projects, but there's good information on earned value and risk management there. I also included a link to the College of Performance Management, their document library. This is actually a component of PMI, at least for now they are. They're struggling with PMI right now and trying to decide if they want to become a part of this virtual community thing or do they want to break away on their own. So that decision hasn't been made yet, but they're struggling with that decision. But they're a college of PMI that focuses on earned value. But one nice thing I like here is if you go to their site and you look up their electronic library, all their presentations that they do for two conferences they have, both in the fall and in May, they actually put those presentations on there. And there's some good presentations out there. Going through them and trying to figure out which ones are helpful is the hardest thing because there's so many of them. I think they have like 80 sessions at each conference or something. But there's a good one on scheduling there. So if you're having trouble understanding scheduling, there's a good one for that. So.
Are those free, do you know, David?
Yeah, you can download them. You can go there and download them.
They're free, okay. So a lot of sites charge, so free is good, especially for folks in transition. So. Yeah.
All right. Now I have a little, and this quote actually came from our program manager, high-level person on my last project, but, you know, as we struggled with a contractor in particular, you know, and we, I talked about the cost and commitment that you have to do performance measurement well. But, you know, we had to keep in mind that we had to achieve the same high level of performance from our cost management team, business management team, as we expected from our technical team. So we expected the product to be perfect and work the way, you know, it was spec to work. But we also had to have that, you know, same commitment and same level of performance, you know, when we're doing cost and schedule. And I had one more quote here just because I liked it. And Eleanor actually is involved with that college of performance measurement. And I had looked at through one of her slides. And this, I really like this because it says that the major failure in EVM so far is, you know, the ability, you know, keep in mind, people are our most important tool. We're not going to recover schedule. We're not going to cut costs unless the people that are on the project are committed to doing that. So I just, again, just reality check sometimes. Tools are great, but people are what we need. So. And the next slides, I'm going to skip, yeah, I'm not going to go into the next slides. The next slides are all about progress reporting. Just talks about how you can report progress. You know, you can do it differently, different, you know, techniques and stuff. So,
yep, and things like that.
It's all part of that Defense Acquisition University site, and there's a, you know, actually a tutorial you can go through, download and go through. Okay? What time is it? How did I do?
You did very well, David. Yeah, you're just slightly over 1 hour, so that's very awesome. Any questions for David at all? Any further questions?
I do have a comment.
Go right ahead.
You know, when I, as always, run into problems with scheduling, not so much with cost, but with scheduling and resources, what I do is I re-baseline, let the stakeholders know, and they fully expect that, especially at the beginning. So I think that's kind of a really good way to get things back on track, especially if we're getting off that, you know, percentage that are so close to hurting us.
Mm-hmm.
The comment I have there is that sometimes it's necessary just to make the numbers meaningful, because if your CPI, SPI, and your variances are so out of whack,
yeah,
that, you know, they actually mean nothing now because they're so out of whack, you know, rebaselining basically resets all those values, and you start over, and now you can now, you know, easily see the next month if you start to deviate from the plan. Now it becomes very, you know, much clearer than in the past, because, you know, so I think you're right about that.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
But I also work with the government. And, you know, there's people in government that hate that word, rebaselining. They just hate it.
Yeah, well, you know.
It happens. Any other questions for David? No? Okay, then. Well, David, thank you very much for this very detailed presentation. I'm really sure this cemented these valuable concepts into the critical mass of all of our listeners. It was extremely helpful. And by the way, we're hearing that some of the PMP exam features a whole bunch of VIRN value management related questions in there. So that's why we wanted to get this session to you folks early in the life cycle of the version 4 test. So you'd have these things, especially those couple new equations that are in there. You never know when you might need those. So we appreciate it.
I know in the version 3 exam, Dana, in talking with people, there were people that said they had a lot of formula questions on, mm-hmm. Then there were people who said they had very few. So I think there were definitely two versions of it, you know, out there. It just happened to be which one did you get.
Right.
Again, I'll remind everybody, know the formulas, write them down at the beginning. It's part of your brain framed up, and that will help a lot. So.
Beautiful. Yep. Great stuff. I'll also remind those who are, there's a couple new people on this call tonight, that PM Lessons Learned conducts 3 free conference calls each month. On the first Thursday of the month, like we're sitting in right now, is the PMP exam study group. Then on the second Thursday is the PM job shop for those folks in transition that are looking for other assignments or whatever. And then finally on the third Thursday of the month, there's the PM Lessons Learned call itself, where folks do presentations on all kinds of different aspects of project management. So if you have some time on a Thursday, by all means, take advantage of that. They all start at 9 o'clock Eastern time. They all have the same starting, all the same bridge number. They're free, so go to pmlessonslearned.com and get the number, and feel free to join us. Okay,
and,
that's it.
Dana, real quick, don't forget, yeah, I know you mentioned it twice already, but I'll plug it one more time, is we do the weekly study group. We do it a little bit differently there. We don't record the calls because we don't want to make them available for people that are not active in the group to be able to download and listen for free. We want your skin in the game on the weekly calls. We want you to actually be a presenter and present and do that. But you gain so much information when you study and you actually put a presentation together. A lot of the material that we have, you know, can help you actually help put it together now. So don't hesitate to join the Monday group if you want. I mean the Tuesday group, the weekly group. And just send us an email that you mentioned earlier.
Beautiful. Right. We certainly like that commitment that the weekly group needs, because you really have to get far along with that. Okay, so that's it for this session of the PM Lessons Learned Monthly PMP Exam Study Group. I'll again thank David for continuing to give back to the project management profession. I'll also thank the live participants on this conference call and everyone that downloads the podcast. I'll remind you that we are pmlessonslearned.com, project managers helping project managers to make a difference. So long, and keep on learning.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project managers helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.